Chapter 26 Arthur Dent allowed himself for an unworthy moment to think, as they drifted up, that he very much hoped that his friends who had always found him pleasant but dull, or more latterly odd but dull, were having a good time in the pub. But that was the last time, for a while, that he thought of them. They drifted up, spiralling slowly around each other, like sycamore seeds falling from sycamore trees in the autumn, except going the other way. And as they drifted up, their minds sang with the ecstatic knowledge that either what they were doing was completely and utterly and totally impossible, or that physics had a lot of catching up to do. Physics shook its head, and, looking the other way, concentrated on keeping the cars going along the Euston Road and out towards the Westway flyover, on keeping the streetlights lit, and on making sure that when somebody on Baker Street dropped a cheeseburger, it went splat upon the ground. Dwindling headily beneath them, the beaded strings of lights of London. London, Arthur had to keep reminding himself, not the strangely coloured fields of cricket on the remote fringes of the galaxy, lighted freckles of which faintly spanned the opening sky above them, but London, swayed, swaying, and turning, turned. "Try a swoop," he called to Fenchurch. "What?" Her voice seemed strangely clear but distant in all the vast, empty air. It was breathy and faint with disbelief. All those things clear, faint, distant, breathy, all at the same time. "We're flying," she said. "A trifle," called Arthur. "Think nothing of it. Try a swoop." "A swoop?" Her hand caught his, and in a second her weight caught it too, and stunningly she was gone, tumbling beneath him, clawing wildly at nothing. Physics glanced at Arthur, and clotted with horror, he was gone too, sick with giddy dropping, every part of him screaming but his voice. They plummeted because this was London, and you really couldn't do this sort of thing here. He couldn't catch her because this was London, and not a million miles from here, 756 to be exact, in Pisa, Galileo had clearly demonstrated that two falling bodies fell at exactly the same rate of acceleration, irrespective of their relative weights. They fell. Arthur realised as he fell, giddily and sickeningly, that if he was going to hang around in the sky believing everything that the Italians had to say about physics when they couldn't even keep a simple tower straight, that they were in dead trouble, and damn well did fall faster than Fenchurch. He grappled her from above and fumbled for a tight grip on her shoulders. He got it. Fine. They were now falling together, which is all very sweet and romantic, but didn't solve the basic problem, which was that they were falling, and the ground wasn't waiting around to see if he had any more clever tricks up his sleeve, but was coming up to meet them like an express train. He couldn't support her weight. He hadn't anything he could support it with or against. The only thing he could think was that they were obviously going to die, and if he wanted anything other than the obvious to happen, he was going to have to do something other than the obvious. Here he felt he was on familiar territory. He let go of her, pushed her away, and when she turned her face to him in a gasp of stunned horror, caught her little finger with his little finger and swung her back upwards, tumbling clumsily up after her. "Shit," she said, as she sat panting and breathless on absolutely nothing at all. And when she'd recovered herself, they fled on up into the night. Just below cloud level, they paused and scanned where they had impossibly come. The ground was something not to regard with any too firm or steady an eye, but merely to glance at, as it were, in passing. Fenchurch tried some little swoops, daringly, and found that if she judged herself just right against a body of wind, she could pull off some really quite dazzling ones, with a little pirouette at the end, followed by a little drop which made her dress billow around her. And this is where readers who are keen to know what Marvin and Ford Prefect have been up to all this while should look ahead to later chapters, because Arthur could wait no longer and helped her take it off. It drifted down and away, whipped by the wind until it was a speck which finally vanished, and for various complicated reasons revolutionised the life of a family in Hounslow, over whose washing line it was discovered draped in the morning. In a mute embrace, they drifted up till they were swimming amongst the misty wraiths of moisture that you can see feathering around the wings of an aeroplane, but never feel because you are sitting warm inside the stuffy aeroplane and looking through the little scratchy Perspex window while somebody else's son tries patiently to pour warm milk into your shirt.